Welcome in to the first episode of the Sports Chasers podcast. I'm Mike Herndon. I'm here with Michael Day, and we're sitting in my lovely downstairs office slash whatever room of my house. We're going to talk a little basketball today, kind of look back at the NBA season, look ahead toward next year. But first, in order to follow your shot, you got to take a shot. Cheers.
That's right. Cheers.
Follow it up. Thanks for joining in. Wow. First of all, let's look back at the NBA championships. Cleveland's got its first NBA title ever, first championship of any kind in 52 years. City went nuts, did not burn down, first of all. How many places have we seen that police cars are on fire, fire trucks are turned over? There was a report that a fire truck had been stolen, although the police said, no, it wasn't stolen. They just were climbing on it. A lot of funny reports out of Cleveland, by the way, that there was a lot of crazy stuff going on, but the cops were like, they're not unruly, they're just happy.
And as well they should. I have to admit, I was not on the Cleveland bandwagon. I did not think they would win that series, but congratulations to them. You know, that was awesome. I mean, I can't imagine that fan base, you know, all they've been through to actually win a title. You know, the prodigal son returns. I mean, you know, if you were writing a script, would you, I mean, if you turned that in, don't you think somebody would have said, nah, you know, that could never happen?
Too improbable.
Yeah, too improbable. That was like, I mean, I can't believe it. I could, but you were on top of it.
I called Cavs in seven, not to break my arm patting myself on the back, but I called Cavs in seven.
You should. That was an awesome pick. I had Warriors in six. I didn't think that Cleveland had faced a team like Golden State, and I didn't think that they could handle Golden State when they went to the small ball lineup and play Richard Jefferson. You know, we wrote about that a little bit. I didn't think that that would work. And it did. I mean, I think,
though, at least from my watching of it, more of the reason that it worked, and yes, they got good minutes out of Jefferson. They got good minutes out of a couple different players that you probably didn't think that they would. But Golden State also wasn't Golden State, I think. And that's not to take anything away from what Cleveland did, because the reason I thought Cleveland would win was because Cleveland played them six games last year and were up 2-1. At one point, without Irving, without Love.
Right, right.
You put Irving on that lineup, that's a different team. And they didn't have him last year. Love, okay, you know, they can get by without him. Mozgov played great last year. But to have Irving back, I thought, would put them over the top, and I think that's what happened. But also, Steph Curry wasn't Steph Curry for a big part of that series.
Yeah, Steph didn't look the same all through the season. You know, Steph would take the off shots that, you know, most people would cringe at, but they would go in. And that was the thing that about Golden State, that conventionally those shots shouldn't go in, and they usually do. So for people knocking Steph or taking threes, in Klay Thompson for pulling the trigger on those threes, that's how they play. And it worked all season long. And I do want to go back to what you were talking about, Kyrie. I agree, man. He was fantastic. And I got to see him live, you know, in the Atlanta series for one game. And I was amazed at how he could run the pick and roll and how fast he was. It's totally different than watching it on the screen. And but he was fantastic. And I thought he actually raised his level of play to where he actually we played a little defense. I mean, that was the knock. I mean,
not early, right? Not in the first couple right, games. It took him a while to get that part of his game going. But
yeah, and I remember I was listening to some podcast with Stan Van Gundy. You know, he was saying that, Jeff, and he was, you know, on the podcast with Zach Lowe. He was saying that, you know, Kyrie was a capable defender, and I was thinking, when did you see that? You know, when has he been capable?
He just hadn't shown it.
Yeah.
Up to that point. Certainly not early in the series. I mean, it didn't look like he played much defense at all the first two games.
I mean, the Cavs just looked so off. And, I mean, I did think they would come back in game three. And I thought they would win the two games at home, and then Golden State would win their home game and have 3-2.
I thought the way it was going after the first two games, I mean, I was backing off my prediction. I was thinking this is going to be, the home teams are going to hold court.
Right.
Because I just didn't see Cleveland beating them in Golden State.
I didn't either. And you know, I guess we have to mention the suspension, although it's been talked about a lot and everything. And I know that that's part of Draymond Green's, you know, deal. You get a good player, but you also get the volatility of Draymond Green. And it did affect the series, but I don't want to take away from Cleveland's performance. Because they still could have lost the game. I mean,
yeah, I tend to think that whole thing's been overblown a little bit. I mean, yes, obviously it's a big loss. It's one of your best players. Probably maybe not one of your best scorers, but one of your a key part of your lineup who does a lot of different things for you.
Right, right.
But to say that they had him, I absolutely would have won that game if he played is – you don't know that. I mean, I think too many people are couching this series as that is the linchpin and that was the difference in the series. The fact that if he had played that game, it would have turned out differently. I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah, I think it's arguable at best. You know, we can go back and forth or people can argue that all the time. But I think I would side with, you know, you mostly on that because I think that to just take away from the performance, I mean, I believe that. So who's to say that LeBron doesn't go and have that same game and force Draymond Green to guard him and get maybe Draymond Green gets into early foul trouble anyway. And so there's your guy in the paint anyway. The Golden State would still been in the same situation they were. So I think that, I was just amazed at the Cleveland's performance, and you tabbed it in your column with LeBron. Those games, you know, 5, 6, and 7, they have to go down as some of the best games ever. I mean, you know, I don't know what more LeBron could have done than what he did in those three games.
Do you think that some of the hate goes away now? Do you think that finally are the haters finally out of ammo? Is there anything else they can say to say, see, he can't do that? I mean, he's pretty much answered everything, hasn't he?
I wish it would go away. It should.
I know it probably won't. I mean, the people that hate him are going to hate him.
Yeah.
But I don't understand where the ammo is going to come from now.
No, the only ammo is the unrealistic ammo that anybody ever puts out there, and it's with Jordan with his titles and how he was, and that's just a different. It's one guy, and you're not ever going to. I mean, Jordan was everything you wanted to be an MVP to be. You know, the most. I mean,
and let's say this up front. Yeah. If we're talking about the best player of all time, I still say it's Jordan.
I do too.
I don't. You know, LeBron is great, and the extreme on the other side now of that discussion is he the best player of all time? I still feel like it's Jordan. I don't think it's hating on LeBron to say that. I think it's a measure of how great he is that we're even having that discussion, but. I mean, I think you got to put him in the top five.
I think so, too, without a doubt. That I mean, you know, people wanted to knock the 6 straight finals. I don't know how you can. I mean, I know I was one of the people that thought the East was kind of weak, but it turns out Cleveland won.
You're right. I think it was kind of weak. And I do think you're right. They had not played a team like Golden State. But they were still good enough. You know, I mean, just because the rest of the East was weak doesn't necessarily mean that they're not the best team in basketball. It just made it tough to figure out exactly how good they were.
Right, and then when you factor in LeBron too, that was when you have the best player, I mean, that's got to be good, right? I mean, especially in basketball, that's one of the things when people look at and they start knocking or bringing people's legacy into question. You know, they might say player X is really good, but is he a good guy who builds stats on a bad team? You know, you should be able to, if you're a really good player, you should be able to drag your team to the playoffs because so many teams make the playoffs and, you know, one player can affect the outcome so much. But man, we were talking about the games. I still have that image of LeBron going down, doing his trademark block on Iguodala's layup, which I think was the signature play. And it's totally LeBron, right? I mean, not giving up on the play, all the things you want your player to be. And, man, I just, like I said, man, enjoy that, Cleveland. I mean, that's your title, that's your team, and that's your guy. I mean, that's just a perfect package.
And you hit on something about LeBron that's always struck me. I mean, even in his first stint in Cleveland and through his time in Miami, he gets this rap of being a bad guy and a prima donna and all this stuff. But his play on the court, from what I've seen, has always been unselfish. He's always been a guy that passes the ball. He's never been a guy that I have to take the shot. And people bag on him for that. You know, somebody tweeted after the series, why is it when they win a game that he's never taken the final shot? Well, Jordan passed up the final shot in two of their 93 and 97. And
right.
You know, people look at that and say, oh, look how unselfish Jordan is. LeBron does it, and he catches this garbage about, he never takes a final shot. He must not, you know, what's wrong with him? Well,
I know.
I mean, I think that play kind of symbolizes the unselfish type of player that he is, that he didn't give up on a play that clearly looked like a fast break. He was way behind that play when he started out and ran it down. And granted, Iguodala couldn't go straight at the basket because he had another defender right at him that made him alter the shot a little bit and gave LeBron a chance to get back. But there are superstars in the NBA who wouldn't have bothered.
Right. They would have saw that would, you know, they would have just put that as a layup and go, you know, get ready for the offensive possession.
Right.
And, I mean, that was incredible. I mean, like you said, the defender was there, but that defender didn't stop Iguodala from putting the ball up. It was LeBron. And in fact, when I saw it real time, you know, since I had picked the Warriors, I mean, I was thinking that he pinned, you know, I didn't think he pinned it. I thought he got it off the backboard. I was like, he got it off the backboard. Come on, they got to review that, you know. But it turns out that it was a legitimate block, no doubt. And, you know, as someone who, you know, you normally roots for LeBron, I was happy that, you know, he won. But I mean, at the time, I couldn't believe he made that block. I mean,
yeah, it was a pretty incredible play. And I don't think it's lessened at all by the fact that Iguodala was not 100%.
No, it's not.
I mean, just for him to get back and in position to even have a shot at making that play was I mean, a great hustle play on top of a great, you know, just great athleticism.
Yeah, and I think the only thing you could wonder about Iguodala is, and maybe, you know, even if his back wasn't hurting, does he try to slam it? Because
but he would have had to go over the defender that was right in front of him. Maybe. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know because, you know, because I harped on this so much back in the day, but one other player that, you know, tried to lay the ball up and got it blocked. And I had this conversation with my dad not too long ago because we were talking about Iguodala. And I said, you remember Sean Kemp when he made the drive against Mutombo and he tried to lay it up and Mutombo rejected it?
Not today.
And I remember complaining to you and you were like, are you still on that, man? I mean, why did he dunk the ball, Mike? You can't go laying the ball up soft like that. My gosh.
Seattle's downfall.
Then Mutombo clutching the ball at the end.
Hey, man, you got a Super Bowl now.
Yeah.
You can rest easy, man.
It's like
Seahawks gave you a Super Bowl.
It's kind of like with Cleveland and Seattle. I think we're on par with that. You know, one title with Seattle and one title with Cleveland's like five anywhere else. I think that's the handicap right there. You win in Seattle or Cleveland, you may as well just put five there. So by the count, like how many? So LeBron's got two rings with Miami,
and one with Cleveland,
and one with Cleveland. So he's actually I'm putting him at seven rings.
You get the Cleveland bonus.
You get the Cleveland bonus, man. I mean, I'm still impressed that you picked them at seven. And I mean, part of me wants to think that you just did it just to be different. But the other part is like, no, I think you really believed that they would win at seven. And
I will tell you this.
That was a great pick, man.
After game two, I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
I was backing off it big time.
Yeah, I mean,
it was really amazing kind of the back and forth and just how – the huge swings of that series where I wondered what kind of odds you could have gotten in Vegas for a Cleveland series win after game two. It had to be astronomical.
Yeah. We could retire if we would have done that.
Be on an island somewhere.
Yeah.
Because it didn't look like they were even in, their heads weren't even in it.
They looked so bad after that defeat in game two. I mean, you know, one of the, you know, I listened to Brian Windhorst talk about it. I mean, and there was nothing good to say. I mean,
yeah, I mean, there really wasn't. But I like you, I did think they were going to come back and win game three. Yeah. And then, you know, then I thought game four was pivotal. When they lost game four, I was right back where I was after game two. I'm like, they're not going to win. How are they going to go back to Golden State and beat them in Oakland after the way they played there the first two games?
You know, and it's kind of strange because it's weird in sports. Obviously, every minute counts, and you have, you know, all the quarter minutes, and you have all those things. You don't want to discount those plays because everything builds up. But I thought a real telling thing, too, in Game 7 was that the score hung for so long. I think it was 89. Was it 89? In the fourth quarter.
I think it was the final 5 minutes that Golden State didn't score.
They didn't score the entire time, and they had plenty of times. And, of course, Cleveland was missing, too. But I just felt like this is the time where Golden State needs to, you know, assert, and they would go in and they'd win. And it's weird. There was that stretch doomed them. And then if you look at, you know, the Oklahoma City series with Golden State, there was that 2 minute stretch where it just kind of came undone for Oklahoma City, or they're in the finals. And it's weird how in sports, it's just, you know, like I said, I don't want to take away from the other side, but it seems like that 2 minutes, if you take those 2 minutes where Golden State has, I think, 7 threes in a row, if they miss one of those, probably Oklahoma City's, you know, playing Cleveland. And
well,
I don't
it's
know
like
who to
it goes back to the old football adage where, you know, I don't remember what coach it was that said this, but I know several probably have, that a football game comes down to about five plays usually. Right. And whoever gets the best of those five plays, that tells the tale of the game. And you know, basketball is no different. That there, you can point to points in the game, a 2 minute stretch here, a 3 minute stretch there, where the game swings, and that's where it's won and lost. And certainly, you know, the end of game seven, I mean, who would have thought Golden State would go that long without scoring?
I know. And that goes to, you know, talking more about LeBron's greatness, because when I watched that last possession with Curry against Kevin Love, I mean, Curry could have driven to the lane at any time. And I know he wanted to launch the three, but I mean, I kept thinking he would go to the lane because he did in the season.
I heard
but
him talk about that afterwards.
Oh, he did?
He admitted that he's like, yeah, I was looking for the three, and it's probably a mistake.
And I think part of it, though, is that LeBron was the specter there. I mean, LeBron blocked his shot so many times in the lane, and maybe he didn't want any part of that, you know?
You know, but it may also have been stuff. I mean, you talked about it briefly a minute ago. I mean, that's that three, he can launch it from anywhere. And you don't bat an eye. There's not such thing as a bad shot almost for Steph.
Right.
And if he thinks, all right, I want a three here, and I've got Kevin Love on me, well, I can just do what I want to do.
Right, right.
You know, I can get him off me and create my shot. I'm not worried about this guy. And Kevin Love played him good.
He did.
He played him tight.
That was the one thing. It kind of makes you wonder, like, does that make up for all the other bad things people said about Kevin Love? But, I mean, I guarantee you, like, if we would have sat down and you would have said, okay, you know, the Golden State's down by three.
Oh, that's going in. Yeah. I'm on team Steph the whole way on that matchup.
I know. And you told me, you said, hey, you know, Steph Curry is going to be against Kevin Love. And what do you think is going to win that? Yeah, I would have been all over Steph. Easy. But it didn't happen. And that's, you know, the same cliche. You know, that's why they play. That's why you want to see the game. And I couldn't believe it. You know, as soon as he let it go, it didn't look like it was going to go in, you know. But obviously, you know, you don't really know. But it just.
Well, I mean, I give him props for never biting on the question.
Right.
But I do think he wasn't 100%.
Right. I don't think he was either. And you know, probably, you know, like they always say, you know, nobody's really 100%, and I believe that, but I think it depends on, you know, what your game is.
I think he was affected.
Yeah.
I think he was affected by whatever the nagging injuries were, the shoulder, whether it was the shoulder or the knee or what. Something was, he wasn't himself, I don't think. It didn't look, just from watching him, he didn't look like himself.
He didn't look like he had the same, and I mean, I caught a lot of Warriors games during the year, and I would like to go back and watch some of them, because it seemed like any time, you know, teams switched the pick and roll and they put a big on him, it was bad news for the team that did that, because he would hit a three or he would drive the lane. And, you know, in the playoffs, I know things were more physical, but you didn't see that same kind of thing. You saw him finally do it when they started, you know, coming back against Oklahoma City. He finally started getting past Adams and
you know, and all this. Clearly affected through part of that series.
Yeah, he didn't, you know, they were, yeah, Adams was, you know, completely covering him, and that's when I thought, and you saw several, I was like, Golden State's done because they can't, you know, when they switch on Steph, Steph's got to make him pay, and if he can't,
right,
they're in trouble. I mean, I know they got other pieces, but that's a main piece.
But if, that but if he's not making him pay, then you're down to Klay Thompson right. by himself, and yeah, he saved him in game six, I think it was.
Right, right.
You know, but Steph was back in game seven.
Right.
And played a huge role in them winning that series. So when he was back, and I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe he's right now. He sure looks like he's right. And the first couple of games of the finals, he sure looked like he was right. But I don't know if he ever really completely was.
I don't think he really was either. And like you said, he never did bite. He always said that he was gonna. He always said that, you know, that he can't use the injury as an excuse.
Well, I really like the way he handled the post game. Yeah. I mean, because he got hit with that question two or three times,
right?
And that's, you know, don't blame the reporters. They're doing their job. They got to ask that question. It's a legitimate question. I mean, were you affected at all by the injuries? And he just would not bite and refused to use that as an excuse, which I give him props for.
Right.
I do think it did affect him.
Yeah.
I think there was something there. It certainly looked to me like he wasn't completely himself.
It's kind of interesting the way that, you know, you bring that up with the dynamic of sports. It's kind of like you get injured and you feel like you have to play, and then you play and you're not 100% and you miss things that you normally would do, but you can't say anything about it because you played. It always seems strange to me that we hold, you know, because, you know, for example, like you said, if Steph bit and said, yeah, I was hurting and that affected my shot, oh
then,
my gosh.
Then he gets ripped for using that as an excuse.
Yeah.
You know, even though he would be, I would, you know, even though if he was being honest,
right?
Okay, yeah, my ankle wasn't, you know, my knee wasn't 100%. My shoulder was bothering me, but you know, I fought through it. You would see somebody come out the next week and say, "Ah, he's, you know, here comes the excuse train,"
right?
And I mean that goes back to this unrealistic plateau we put athletes on, and you know, we do it a bit here with LeBron James. You're talking about how great he is. He's a great player. He's an incredible athlete. But we expect them to be Superman, and, you know, injuries affect people.
Right.
Things that are going on in people's lives affect people. Tiger Woods has never been the same golfer since all that stuff with his wife happened.
True.
Golf's a mental game. He's never had that mental control or dominance that he once had. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen an athlete fall off the cliff like he did. And he was the best golfer, I would say, ever up until that happened.
He was
nobody dominated the sport like he did. So there's things that can happen in their personal lives. There's things that can happen physically. There's things that can happen just to get them off their game mentally. And we as fans and we as media and writers and everybody else expect them to play to a certain level all the time and disregard all these other factors that may be at play. And, you know, every now and then somebody has a bad game.
Right, right.
I mean, we were talking earlier today, full disclosure, we were talking earlier today about 2010 Alabama-Auburn game.
Oh, yeah.
When Alabama has 24-0 lead and Cam Newton leads Auburn back, and you're there and you're in traffic leaving the game, and people are on talk radio complaining that Saban ought to lose his job because he's lost it. How stupid does somebody have to be? How blind and ignorant does somebody have to be to think that that was indicative of Saban not being worthy of coaching Alabama?
It's incredible, isn't it? It's incredible that people have those kind of opinions. And sometimes I step back and think, you know, I'm just kind of like an average person. But sometimes I wonder, like, how does somebody make that? Did they watch the game? Did they see the same thing? And that, you know, like you said, that was coming off a championship year, right? I mean,
they'd won the national title the year before. Yeah.
I mean, after a long drought, I mean, not only a long drought, but I mean, I'm talking, they were
92 was the, the last 92. Time before that. And you had gone through the Mike Dubose and Mike Shula and years and the Mike Price, debacle.
Yeah. Didn't even get to coach a game. And you just wonder how people can feel that way. I mean,
I, from having spent time as a sports writer and catching grief from fans about stories that were written, I mean, I can say one part of it is they look at when they're, I say they, we're overgeneralizing here. You know, right. A lot, most fans, I would say, understand context.
Right.
A lot of the ones that talk radio, that call talk radio complaining, are not going to be your typical run of the mill fans. They're going to be your extreme. They look at this in a bubble. This is the one game I'm looking at, and how in the world could they lose that game? Forget the context of what happened the rest of the year, where Auburn has done that to every other team they've played.
Right.
Because Cam Newton has led them back against everybody.
Everybody.
And forget the context of Nick Saban led Alabama to its first national title in how many years, you know, just last year. Because of this one game, I'm going to have this knee-jerk reaction opinion that he can't, he's not good enough to coach at Alabama. So that's where a lot of it comes from. And I used to see it because people would call me complaining about some story I wrote and say, well, you're a homer because you wrote this story without the context of the last five stories I wrote that were the opposite or from other perspectives. So
yeah.
That, you know, a lot of people don't look at the full picture of what's going on. They look at whatever just happened in front of their eyes. And once again, we're overgeneralizing because I think your more rational fans are not going to be the ones calling up frothing at the mouth on talk radio anyway.
Right, especially after coming off a national title year. And, you know, and I know there was the controversy with Cam and all the other things that went along with that, but Cam was a once-in-a-generational player, and I'm glad I got to go to the game and see somebody like that play. And the funny thing, you know, I won't go into too many details, but what I it's funny that you mentioned that earlier about, you know, when you were back in your reporting days and those kind of things, when you wrote those five stories and they would call you a homer and everything, and they would say, oh, you're just a homer for Team X. And it's funny because I know you, and I was thinking, man, these, it was just... They don't even know your background, and I'm like, that's not true.
Yeah. I mean, well, they're looking at it from their perspective, you know, and you're right. I mean, they hadn't dug at that point, but you, as a sports writer, you know that's part of the gig. I mean, you know that if you write something that even whiffs of something that's not positive about a certain team, that fan base is gonna be up in arms about it, and that just comes with the territory. And the best you can do is hope that both sides are mad at you, because that tells you that you're probably being pretty objective and in the middle.
Yeah, it's kind of an effective thing. Yeah. The one thing I wanted to ask you is, do you think, shifting back to the Golden State Cleveland series, I mean, do you buy anything about this talk about when Klay Thompson, you know, with the Draymond Green suspension, and Klay Thompson said, I guess LeBron's feelings got hurt. Do you think that played a part, because people had painted that, you know, Golden State was calling out LeBron? He did seem to, you know, take it a little more, kind of like game six in Boston that time where I heard that later on that people felt like Paul Pierce and the Boston Celtics got a little too personal with LeBron. And LeBron came out and had a massive game six. And, of course, you know, Miami went on to win the series. I mean, win the title that year, too. And I wonder what your thoughts were that. Do you think that played any part? Because it did look like LeBron, you know, turned into, you know, Superman at that time. And it looked like Golden State kind of tugged at his cape a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think disrespect is a powerful motivator for athletes in particular. But having said that, I think that whole narrative gets overplayed a lot. I think, you know, there's a part of me that thinks you're playing for the NBA championship. You are playing for the first championship in Cleveland, which is essentially your hometown because Akron's nearby. In 52 years, the first championship in program history, franchise history, And you have come back to Cleveland promising that that's what you were going to do. It shouldn't need somebody calling you out for you to step up your game at that point. So I don't know how much effect it really had. I mean, I think there wasn't any room for any more motivation than he already had, because he knew what would happen if they lost again. He would get killed on talk radio and in town and everywhere. They'd be crucifying him, yeah, just like they did the last year. He can't win the big one. He went off to Miami and rode around with Bosch and Wade and got a couple titles, but when he comes back here, he can't do it himself. Right. He would have gotten killed. And could that have been a little bit extra motivation? Yeah, maybe, but I think it's probably overblown. I mean, on the one hand, disrespect is something that is a huge motivator for any professional athlete. And you always hear them talk about it. If there's any whiff of disrespect from anybody, they always talk about that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how the stakes could have been any higher than they already were.
Right.
So I don't, part of me, and probably the biggest part of me, thinks that was overblown a bit.
I think so too. And I think,
but it's like, fun to talk about.
It is fun to talk about. And I mean, I even play that up in the column a little bit, where I felt like if you're LeBron James and you look over at Steph Curry, and you know that you play all phases of the game. You play you can defend multiple positions. You're one of the best passers ever, and you can score when you need to. And you look over at Steph Curry and you think, yeah, he's got a shot and he can dribble, but doesn't play defense. I mean, he does, but he's not very good, right? I mean, that's not the strong part of his game. And you look at him and you think, that's your unanimous MVP. And
well, not only that, I mean, after last year, the argument was, is Steph Curry the greatest player of all time? People were comparing Steph Curry to Michael Jordan, and LeBron wasn't in that conversation because of what happened last year. And so, yeah. I mean, now, the MVP, I mean, a lot of that's going to go back to team success, and at the point that they voted on that, I mean, Golden State won 73 games, broke the regular season record for wins. It's kind of hard to argue with that. But for people to be making the argument that Steph Curry could be the best player of all time, and don't get me wrong, I'd say he's the best shooter of all time.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that either. I mean, he's definitely.
But for people to be making the comparison to Jordan and trying to argue that he may be the best player of all time, then, yeah, I mean, if you're LeBron James, you can take that as a little bit of disrespect. But once again, I think the stakes were already so high for him with coming back to Cleveland and the promise of I've come back with the express purpose of bringing a title to this town. How could the stakes get any higher than they already were?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't see how you could heap more.
Because if you don't, you're a failure.
Yeah.
To that town's eyes, you're a failure.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I had no issues obviously with the players. That I mean, they obviously settled the outcomes, and it's for them really and their fans.
And Draymond came out and went out of his way to find LeBron and give him a hug after the series, from what I saw. So that, you know, I mean, they're competitors. I don't get into all that, you know, back and forth. When you see the respect they show each other after the game, those are two guys battling hard and doing what they do. I mean, more power to them.
Yeah, that was, I think, the only thing that hurt me about it was the Dan Gilbert thing. And look, you know, written about that too. If LeBron can forgive Dan Gilbert for that, you know, dumb letter, you know, I should be able to, because I have no stake in it. But it's still, gosh, he's such a better human being than I am. I mean, there's no... I can tell you where I would not have come back to Cleveland. I mean, it's awesome that he did. Obviously,
what a great storyline.
It is.
I mean, like you said earlier, I mean, you couldn't have written it up any better. I mean, fact was better than fiction there, for him to come back and do that. But yeah, I mean, there had to be a lot of water going under the bridge to come back and do that and play for the same guy.
Well, and I know in this world, you know, we're all used to you know, the rich people, quote unquote, right? They get, you know, people say, well, rich people get what they want all the time. But, you know, maybe Dan Gilbert learned, you know, a little humility with that. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. You know, obviously never will travel the same circle as Dan Gilbert.
Well, if the record while LeBron was in Miami, if Cleveland's record was any indication, he should have learned a little bit because they were
pretty bad, right?
Let's move from the past to the future. Do you think Cleveland's the team to beat next year?
You know, when you most of the time the sports cliche is, you know, once you win the title, you're the best team, and
until somebody beats you, you're the champ.
So I'd say they're definitely in there, and you know, the GM and most of the things I've heard about from Cleveland is that they want to bring the same team back, which I know Mozgov,
who signed with the Lakers.
But that's kind of interesting because, you know, the most people think that Kevin Love won't be there. And
with Mozgov signing with the Lakers, I mean, I think that would up the ante for them wanting to bring Kevin Love back. But, I mean, you never know. They may have their eyes on somebody else. I mean,
yeah, I've never been as hard on Kevin Love as most people. I always felt that, you know, with Minnesota, they put him in the post and he could do more things. Obviously, the team was worse, and so he was called upon to score, and he always rebounded pretty well. Defense was always an issue, which, you know, they're you know, a lot of players have issues with defense. He's not the only one. But I always felt like with him and LeBron and Kyrie, they kind of got in each other's way. And if you're going to
more so than the other two,
right? Right. Because, but man, when I watched them play in Atlanta, they were just magic, you know, because they would run the pick and roll, and then LeBron would either get it and back his man down and find Kevin Love open, or they would switch over and Kevin Love was open, or Kyrie would just go to the basket. It was like impossible for them to stop that in Atlanta. I know Atlanta, you know, lost 0-4, but Atlanta wasn't horrible. I mean, they had some people who could play. And it was just the offense was too good. And then, you know, and J.R. Smith was hitting too. So,
well, and that's a whole other dimension when he's hitting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that Kevin Love didn't play horribly. And I think that he has value. And I know that they're kind of overpaying for somebody who you want to put in corners and hit threes. But I thought that, you know, he at least showed that he would, you know, he could do more. You wanted to see Kevin Love in Game 7 where he was trying to rebound and he, you know, tried to play defense. And that's the guy you want to see. And I don't see any reason why he can't be that guy. I don't know why you want to just push him off unless you just, you know, want to get somebody else. But, I mean, who, you know, I mean, obviously we can't go down every single, you know, NBA roster or anything like that, but there's, you know, Kevin Love has value. I mean, you better be bringing somebody else in.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Well, obviously I would think, particularly with Mozgov being gone, if you let him go now, you got to go bring some help in the paint. But Tristan Thompson can't be your only option. I mean,
right.
You think you have to bring somebody else in.
The West is so stacked with teams because you can't ignore San Antonio. Although I do think the issue with them is, I'm kind of segueing in, but I think the issue with San Antonio is that who's going to defend teams like Golden State with Steph and those guys? It seems like their guards are getting old.
Age has got to catch up with them sometime, and I think it's starting to.
Yeah, yeah.
As good as they are and as great a coach as Pop is, I mean, at some point – you know, and adding Aldridge was a great move.
It was,
And is going to, you know, probably extend some careers around him, but still at some point, the age is going to catch up.
Right, right. And there were, you know, glimpses where Parker was playing pretty well, but that was the main thing that I saw what kind of doomed them in Oklahoma City is that they could get open shots, they couldn't hit them. You know, Parker and Manu, they were getting open shots, they just couldn't hit them, and you know, they always that's the running joke with the NBA. You know, it's a make or miss league. You know, and they were missing.
And when you're missing, that's it doesn't matter how good you are.
No, it's not good. It's not good. No. But yeah, the West is going to be incredible again. And people, you know, I've kind of forgotten that the Clippers were looking pretty good too until they got hurt. You know, until their players went down.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. How they come back next year, whether Cleveland is able to repeat, Does Golden State bounce back and make another run like they made this year? Does anyone else challenge? Anybody else from the East challenge? A lot of storylines looking toward the next NBA basketball season. And for now, I think we'll wrap up. And thank you for joining us for our first podcast for Sports Chasers. I'm out of beer, so it's as good a reason as any to wrap this up. Once again, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.
Right, and as we always say, always remember, follow your shot.